Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning for this Thursday morning. It's the 30th of June. We're almost done another month, so here we are. We welcome you, and we welcome your comments, your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org is the way that you can correspond with us. Roundtable at WAMC.org, and we would love to hear from you. Let me introduce our panel to you this morning. WAMC's Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Joe.
Here.
Talk. Every day the same thing happens. He's a real radio.
How many years have you been doing this?
Every day. Yeah. Okay, so Joe, it's been a great week. I've been anticipating going to the Guthrie Center, don't you know, on Saturday night.
Don't you know,
to hear the great Happy Tram,
413-528-1955. Whoa, nice. Okay, great. Saturday night at the Guthrie Center.
Yeah.
All right.
There's this other guy playing up there in the Birches, too. Maybe drawing a few people away, Bob Dylan at Tanglewood.
Maybe. Yeah. Judy Patrick is with us. apparently now I'm full-time on staff. It's very nice to have you here. We love having you.
So I have a question. Where is the Guthrie Center?
It's in Great Barrington on Division Street in a place called Van Dusenville. It's the way you get over from Great Barrington, don't you know, over by the railroad track, down to Hooseyville, Housatonic, which is where, the hipsters go.
Good to know. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for asking, and thank you for filling that. Right. Yeah. That's what you say. Follow along on Google.
Yeah. Google Maps. You can take the trip along.
Sure. Chris Churchill joins us. He's a Times Union columnist, and we're thrilled to have him when he joins us. And thank you for being here.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Nice to have you with us. We have a lot to talk about this morning, and I guess the story that we should start with is a story that broke just this morning, just about 2 hours ago, and that is that Boris Johnson, who is the one of the most prominent leaders of the Brexit movement, has announced that he will not run for
leader.
Prime Minister. He will not succeed David Cameron as Prime Minister. He wants to spend more time looking for a comb.
Things happen very quickly in British politics, don't they?
Yes.
Like the Prime Minister says, I'm leaving.
I know. We have these long, drawn-out elections. I like it. It's quick.
It's just, I'm leaving, and then we can decide when the next person will come in, and then we'll just do it. It's not bad.
Yeah.
So the race is to succeed David Cameron as Prime Minister of Britain was turned upside down on Thursday when Boris Johnson, widely seen as the leading candidate, chose at the last minute not to run after his close ally Michael Gove unexpectedly said he would seek the job. The turn of events was the latest political aftershock from Britain's vote last week, a week ago, to leave the European Union, and it could benefit another candidate, Theresa May, the Home Secretary, who laid out her case on Thursday for why she should leave the party.
And the bottom line here is this isn't a popular vote. This is a vote that will happen in Parliament, correct?
Yes.
So they're all not going to go to the polls again.
It's kind of odd in a way that they go to the polls for Brexit, but don't go to the polls to elect the Prime Minister. Yeah, but I mean, obviously that's their system.
But then they can hold a vote later, right?
Can't
they do? Then they can do a vote later on.
But not directly on the Prime Minister, right?
No, they vote on the government,
right.
Yeah,
that's right.
Okay.
And so they call an election. Is that?
Yes.
It's not every. Well, it's not like the second Tuesday in every November.
It's like your class election, right? I mean.
I'm showing my ignorance and I apologize.
Don't you see?
No. Like a senior class?
No,
I mean, high
like
school?
Like your PS75 and your Mrs. Anderson's just.
But there's clearly turmoil in Britain politics about this Brexit vote.
Right, because they don't know what to do next.
And I think they're having a hard time reading their electorate because so many people are saying, oops, did we do something very bad? Mm-hmm. And what do we do to recover?
Well, and that does seem to be, that is the other article that I sent was just there seems to be such turmoil because everybody was so focused on the vote that nobody seems to know quite what to do now. It does seem at some point there would have been a discussion of, oh, now what do we do? But apparently that really never took place. It was all based on winning. Then they won, and then they're like, all right.
They also didn't expect to win, right? So they didn't have the contingency plan for what would happen if they actually did, it seems like.
And there's so much to be done. They have so many things to work out as they go forward, or maybe they're not going to do anything. The EU seems to be strongly saying, yeah, you guys have to withdraw and you have to start doing it sooner rather than later.
It's like a divorce.
Don't hang around here.
Right, get out of the house.
You don't want me, you get out.
No tape down the middle of the floor.
Get out of here right now.
And they have backed off. The EU has backed off that a little bit. But they held a meeting without David Cameron yesterday, and they still don't really seem to know what to do either. They don't know how to play this.
Yeah, they say you go first. I listen. I leave the house at 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning, so I listen to BBC all the way over here, and coverage has been excellent. They had a guy from the EU, sort of pompous guy.
They're all pompous guys. That's why they voted.
Probably just the accent. Maybe they're really not
just
pompous.
Just a pompous guy. And he said, I'm not going to negotiate over the BBC with you. They have to come to us with a plan, and then we will react to that plan, and then you will react to our plan, and like that. So nobody's given anything right now.
So maybe it'll be the status quo for us.
No, I'm just enjoying the accent. I want you to do the rest of the show like that.
Then I will.
And then you have people like Angela Merkel, and others who are coming out and saying, well...
That's who the guy was. The guy was Angela Merkel's deputy who was on with the BBC guy. And for once, he wiped up the floor with the BBC. He said, I'm not going to negotiate with you over the BBC. Oh, don't you see?
You're getting your wish, Chris. Very nice.
I didn't realize it was a German accent, though.
Well,
there were certain contingencies that happened in the world that created that situation. World War II. Hold your letters.
Angela Merkel of Germany shut the door on any overhaul involving the revision of European treaties, a laborious process that requires referendums and is often stoke anti-European sentiment. Merkel said that Europe needed to recover and inspire ordinary citizens with an ambitious vision, as the United States did with its space program.
Right.
So everyone's using as an example something that happened a long, long time ago.
Yeah, they used to say the Marshall Plan, but now they say the space plan.
Yes.
Right, and then there's some talk that they need to seriously look at the fundamental issues or disputes happening here. Why did the Britons say no?
Right, because other countries could do the same thing if they just leave it all on.
Well, but there's never been a big taste for giving up their sort of emotional as well as political sovereignty in Great Britain. And I have a feeling, and I've announced this before to deafening silence from everybody else, that I think some of the guys who are against leaving really were secretly in their gut for. Which is why I suspect we're not seeing the push that a lot of people expected for a do-over.
Well, I think many have even admitted that, of saying that that they voted for it, but they didn't expect it to win, and they felt that it was important for them to send a message, but the message they wanted to send wasn't exactly let's actually do this.
Yeah, but I'm not talking about the rank and file us common
people.
No,
I'm talking about the leaders too.
Yeah.
Two of those, and I think we even see this in Boris Johnson, who has said, okay, well, I'm probably not the guy to I did this, and now we don't really know what to do. Why am I going to put myself in a position where I have to follow this?
Where I have to do something and
right,
make it right.
And follow through on what I promised.
By the way, Joe, he was already backing off. He was already backing off and saying things like, we need more time, we need more of this, so we don't have to do it right
away.
Well,
they were all backing off within 12 hours of the vote.
So the whole idea is you're standing there, and you didn't win, and you have to sort of just shuffle a little bit imperceptibly to your left or to your right in order to protect yourself politically. Don't you see?
Well, that's what you see after every election, right? I mean, there are always promises made that aren't delivered on, and people shift a little bit, and when you get into the real nitty-gritty of negotiations, things change.
So and Chris, that was my point.
Yeah.
Politically expediency.
I stole your point.
But do you think the EU?
Do it in an accent, Chris. Do it in an accent.
Do you think the EU is really going to discuss this, address some of these issues that people were talking about, how the commission worked and how there wasn't a lot of accountability, there wasn't a lot of input from
yes.
The
no,
countries?
I think it's going to make a big difference.
Well, the big thing, though, seems to be the free movement of people, and that seems to be it's the kind of a guiding principle of the whole idea.
And they're going to have to negotiate that, too, because it was a fascinating story on the BBC yesterday about people who were Dutch citizens, Brits who were Dutch citizens, who were changing their citizenship so that their kids can have, you know, the opportunities of being in the EU.
Mm. Well, also, there were fundamental problems with the EU that, of course, were major points that were made during the Brexit campaign and ultimately the vote. So to your point, Judy, as the EU looks to restructure and figure out how to go it without Britain, they also have to address some of the many problems that they have and that they're dealing with, all while also trying to keep it together of other people not fleeing or potentially joining the EU.
Right, we're hearing that kind of talk already in Greece and France, talk about whether it's great to stay in the EU going forward.
The EU sort of has this Merkel lady as the top person making these decisions. So a lot is
the Merkel lady.
A lot is falling on her her watch to have to decide how much charity to show towards Great Britain and how much they need them, while at the same time not encouraging, as you just said profoundly, Joe, while not encouraging the others to do the same thing.
And to borrow a phrase, it seems that she has sort of emerged as the adult in the room.
Yeah, no, she's done very well. I think she's done very well. She comes from East Berlin. Did you know that? From East Germany. Did you know that?
Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah,
but isn't that part of the thing that rankled people about the EU in the first place, is that Germany was basically too powerful a country in the mix.
Sheesh, where have we heard that before?
Yeah, I know, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, and one of the things we're not hearing a lot of is, what about us? You know, I hate to be so American-centric, but we're still not figuring out what this will mean to America.
Well, it's interesting if you watch the stock markets, because we had Hugh Johnson on this very radio station, right, Joe?
Yes.
And he was very good, and we asked him that question. He said, give it a week. And now, boy, my 401k or whatever we have here.
403B.
403B has increased in value, and I think I could retire safely now.
Mm. It could also affect, you're talking about our election, too. Or just
affecting the election, affect our industries, import, exports.
Well, I think that's a great point, because we, in this country, we have focused mostly on the economic aspect of it, as opposed to, although there certainly have been the parallels to the Trump campaign and and what we're seeing in
Obama wasn't over there, Joe, for no reason at all, saying you should vote to stay in.
Yeah,
that was extraordinary, interfering in another country.
Yeah, and it was a mistake too.
Well, it's hard to say.
I think so. I think people in a country automatically kind of get their back up when a foreign leader comes in and tells them how to vote. I know we would. Can you imagine if Prime Minister of England came over and told us how to vote in the presidential election? I mean, it would bother people.
His language was a little more, I don't think it was that direct, though, was it?
Well, he was still, I mean, that's what he may have been trying to smooth it, but I mean that's what he was saying.
It was up to the people, but he wanted to make sure everyone knew that the importance of having Britain in the EU. Yeah. I don't know. It didn't strike me at the time. I know it's sort of looked back on as that, but it didn't strike me as the time of kind of blatant campaigning for this.
I've seen interviews with ordinary voters who said it bothered them. I mean, whether that was the deciding factor in their vote, who knows? But you know, it did seem to annoy people.
Do we have letters on this issue?
We have a letter from Tony. She formerly writes, but actually not that right. England is a monarchy, and the Queen's First Minister runs her government. Because Parliament is supreme, the Prime Minister can only exist with the confidence of Commons, which is support from the majority of members in the House of Commons. When a Prime Minister like Cameron resigns, the Queen selects another man. I could be a woman. It was Margaret Thatcher. Don't forget that, Tony. Another man to be her First Minister, who must get a majority of MPs. Else England would need a Parliament that can give her choice of a Prime Minister confidence. In other words, a new general election. No, I don't think that's really the way that works. Really, the way it works is the party decides and she then does it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think.
Otherwise, we should be talking to the Queen.
I wouldn't mind that. Have you ever tried to call her, Joe?
Get her on the panel?
No.
It's a missed opportunity. She's got a good accent.
There's an accent.
She could bring the corgis with her.
And Beth. Do we have another?
Yes. From Larry, who said, in your discussion of Brexit and the rise of nationalism, you have to notice in the similarities here. I might be late on this, but kind of scary. And he gives us, Larry sends us two pictures. One of Boris Johnson with his
former
hand
mayor
up in
of
the,
London.
Yeah, who's declared he's not going to be prime minister.
Yes.
And right next to him, a similar picture of Donald Trump saying, make America great again, while Boris is saying, make Great Britain great again.
Yeah, they do kind of look alike. I mean, at least the hair looks alike.
Yes, they have similar hair.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then Kenny mentions Netanyahu in response to what you said about having messed things up. Netanyahu came over and gave a speech to the Congress to influence our foreign policy. He did, and lost, and infuriated the president while he was doing it. Claire says, just to clarify, the conservative leadership vote is just that, a vote for the leader of the conservative party. This is an internal party membership vote, and by the default, that person will then become prime minister. And so don't we know that?
We know that. Yeah. The same way Canada works.
Okay. Canada is, of course, part of, Great Britain.
Right.
It was.
Right.
And a lot of their institutions come directly from that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a very good country. And I've been looking at real estate over there in case certain things happen.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whereabouts? Nova Scotia?
I can't say. Oh. It's a non-disclosure agreement.
Quebec?
Yeah.
Quebec could leave, though. Then you'd find yourself in another pickle.
Quebec is great, especially if you're a runner. It's great. You run up those hills. It's great.
All right. Do we have...
It's a tourism program.
Yeah.
We don't have more.
If we have one more letter, that would be great. That'll get us to a break. But if not, I can we can work on something
else. Well, I can make one up, but
no, that's all right.
Don't worry
about it. The other story that we will... we can talk about more, but let's just start it now, of course, is the Puerto Rico rescue bill. This clears Congress just before the debt cliff in the last moments. Puerto Rico... has a fiscal crisis, and they have been working very hard. So a vote 68-30 opens a path for an orderly restructuring of the island's, get this, $72 billion in bond debt.
So they have to take what New York once had to do, take a fiscal, oversight board. And there are people who don't like that. And the Republicans insisted on that. I think they're right.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're right. It has to be done. It seems to me that when we're talking about policy, there are Democratic way, Republicans, they fight, but there are some things that just need to get done. So they wait to the end and then they do it with less of the nonsense.
Mitch McConnell said, obviously, the bill isn't perfect, but it offers Puerto Rico the best chance to return to financial stability and economic growth over the long term so we can help prevent another financial crisis like this in the future.
Yeah. You're probably not going to believe this, but when I was 12 years old, I was appointed Puerto Rican youth ambassador and went to Puerto Rico.
Wow.
Stayed in the house of the Undersecretary of Labor.
Okay.
Isn't that interesting?
It is very interesting. So interesting, we're going to take a break and think about it. I was just going through the when you look at either the New York Times, Washington Post, even the Wall Street Journal, they have those headline bullets on the side, and just in a bunch of three of Donald Trump has long benefited from trade practices he now scorns. The second one is Trump Institute offered get rich schemes with plagiarized lessons.
That's a good one, by the way.
And and the third one is Trump flip flops a long list. As the campaign enters a new phase, we look at several of these issues, and I wanted to spend some time. We could probably lump them all together because they do They do certainly overlap, don't they? But the main one is the New York Times piece today that the get rich schemes with plagiarized lessons from the from Trump University. What they found is that the Trump University was basically founded on this real estate manual that somebody found, and they just kind of copied and pasted and put it
right
together.
Right. Well, as I said in an earlier commentary, this is not felonious activity, I don't believe. I think this is stuff you get sued for because you've promised somebody that you're going to deliver a product to them which is good, and you're going to have access to Trump himself in one way or another. And it turns out that that's all a bunch of hokum. Nevertheless, it's important if that's the way the guy's going to behave.
You know, this is so interesting because the mainstream press gets criticized for dumping on Donald Trump. But if you read these stories, these practices are clearly wrong. And it's rated by the Better Business Bureau as an F, cut and pasted. When you talk plagiarism, you're hitting me in the heart because as a newspaper editor, this is something we really abhor. It's theft. It may not land you in jail, but time and time again, we get these stories about Donald Trump, and we're trying to be fair. He's the presumptive Republican nominee. We want to give his views a fair airing, but we also want to get these basic facts out there, and that's not slanted journalism.
Yeah, they all undercut his message too, which is that he's the guy who can fix the economy. When you look at polls, that's where he really dominates Hillary. And it would seem like the more of these kind of stories you get, the more people would maybe question that. Although on the flip side, he was on reality TV for years and years and years as the ultimate businessman. So that's it's a hard image to kind of chisel away at once it's kind of cemented in people's minds, perhaps. But
These programs were offering Trump's leadership styles or Trump insight into building your real estate business when actually he wasn't involved and it wasn't anything more than you could get in a 1995 Success magazine article, which is what they plagiarized from.
Mm.
The the New York Times article in talking about the Trump flip-flops says that his proposals have often been vague, his prepared statements often contradicted by his own off-the-cuff remarks and speeches and interviews, yet he has so far avoided much harm despite reversing himself, sometime within hours, sometimes within the same speech, on hot-button campaign issues like immigration, abortion, and economic policy. The Muslim ban, one, that he was willing to let some Syrian refugees enter the United States despite the security risks, saying something has to be done. It's an unbelievable humanitarian problem. In December, after the Islamic State-inspired attack in San Bernardino, Mr. Trump shocked even many Republicans by proposing a religious test. In May, with the Republican nomination his, Mr. Trump retreated slightly, now calling for the ban merely an idea, not a proposal. On June 13th, he offered a slightly new formulation that the ban would be geographical and not religious, and then he said areas of the world, the ban would be geographical, not religious, applying to areas of the world where there is a proven history of terrorism against the United States, Europe, or our allies, but not just any kind of terrorism. He clarified on Twitter 2 hours later that the ban was only for nations tied to Islamic terror. Then in Scotland last weekend, Mr. Trump said he would allow Muslims from allies like the United Kingdom to enter the United States.
Well, you know, to me, the big issue here is why is it that this doesn't bother more people? It doesn't. Well, it seems to be water off a duck's back. And that's bothering me personally. And I'm saying, okay, then what's the lesson about who his designed electorate goal is towards? And the fact, they just don't care.
They don't care. I mean, his supporters don't care about those kind of things. The question is whether people in the middle care. And that's an open question because, in a way, you can look at that and say, well, you know, this is an authentic human being kind of struggling his way through these issues the way everybody else does. Yeah. You know, people get sick of politicians with their talking points and the scripted language every single time. In a way, it makes him look more authentic.
Yeah, and Trump supporters will say that his positions are evolving, but others will say that he is changing his positions for political expediency.
Right.
And the other point
that's the point. If people start to get the feeling that he's doing it for political expediency, I think it hurts him. If he's just a little bit inexperienced at the political game, I think it might even help him.
Well, I'm not even sure. Is it political expediency as much as it is? And I apologize if I'm wrong here, but is there a point where it seems more like he hasn't read the script that was written for him, and he has what he has in his mind. There's what is prepared for him, and they don't seem to necessarily correlate with one another.
Some of it's expediency. I mean, he couldn't have won the nomination as a pro-choice Republican, presumably. Right. So, I mean, he's obviously that position has obviously changed to fit the right. race that he needed to win.
Right. Well, you know, we had an interesting letter from Bernard today, who said, Alan, I'd like your opinion on this. I always like that when we get that kind of question. Does one need a background in political science or politics to be a politician? You need several degrees in education to be a teacher. You need several degrees in a scientific concentration to be a scientist and so on and so forth. Don't you see? In politics, something malleable with respect to these qualifications is politics something malleable with respect to these qualifications? If so, what does that mean with somebody like Trump who clearly has no qualifications? Does it mean he and anyone else is qualified, making Clinton's point mute? Well, to be honest with you, I know many political scientists who have no idea what they're talking about. Many professors. You've had them, haven't you guys?
Political science degree might make you less qualified to be a politician.
Well, yeah. and therefore, they stick to some old principle that has long been, thrown out the window and use the same notes a couple of years in a row and maybe 10, 15, 25.
Of course.
And therefore, I would seriously answer the question, when you say he has no N-O qualifications, he probably does. You know, it's America. He's run businesses. He's gotten through. And white males in this country love this guy by an overwhelming majority.
And most politicians are lawyers, and we can have a pretty good argument about whether that's a good thing or a bad thing.
It's a bad thing.
It's a bad thing. Okay, yeah. Well, there goes that argument.
But to know how government works, yeah. To understand how the system works, to understand that if you were going to change the system, you have to know how the current system works. Do you get that sense with this guy?
No, definitely not. But
and doesn't that, to the letter writer's point?
But that's not a degree, right? That's just reading the newspaper every day.
Well, that's also experience. Right. It's an experience as a politician. I mean, if you look at who you're, what?
No, I was just shaking my head in agreement with
okay.
you.
Okay, I mean, like, if you're looking at someone, you're not shaking your head in agreement.
I am.
If you have somebody, Hillary Clinton has been in elected office. She has held high positions, Bernie Sanders, Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, all of these people who, in the Republican case, lost to Trump, had experience.
And not only that, some of the brightest people I have known in the world never went to college. I mean, they're bright, they're effective, they know what they're doing. Look, even in your papers, guys, there are people who came up the old way, the old-fashioned way.
But you wouldn't have had to go to college to be elected to office.
No.
That's what I mean.
I agree.
I think the flip-flopping on the issues makes people wonder where he really stands. Like, where does he really stand?
And what he understands.
Right, because he is going to be he is running for the highest office in the land. And he often, even though he has advisors, he often overrules the advisors, and we're not electing the advisors, we're electing him.
Mm.
Also, many people that are said to be advisors then go off and
CNN
and talk against to talk, you know, talk.
Yeah.
What's interesting though is that in the polls he always scores high as the honest candidate, the more honest candidate, and this would seem to contradict that.
Go
ahead.
Is that honesty or just?
An experience. Yeah.
Well, no, you're not having a. You don't have a filter. You just say what's on your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Call a jerk, right. A jerk is a jerk.
Right. Well, I see it a little bit differently. I think intuitively, this guy knows who his audience is, what he wants from them, and he's getting it. He's getting it in that Many reports as of today are that it is a very close election, according to the pollsters. Now Silver, Nate Silver. He's saying it's going to be a wipeout for Hillary. She's going
to
wipe him out.
He has Trump at a 20% chance to win.
Clear Politics has
Hillary up by 6 or 7 points, which is pretty much a landslide.
Well, depending on who votes.
But Nate's all
right. But that's an average of all the polls. You know, definitely depending on who turns out. And
the one thing Nate Silver has been doing, and NPR had a piece on this on Morning Edition this morning, is the Electoral College, and that is really where he loses. And when you look at the
what did Nate Silver say, Joe, about whether Trump could be the nominee? I don't remember, but I don't remember him being up there all the time.
Well, no, he was wrong about that. He thought there was no way that he would ever. Yeah, he was wrong.
But I mean, everybody else. What I'm talking about is looking at the polls versus looking at the Electoral College looks
really bad for him.
Yes.
Because there are states in play that shouldn't be in play, like Arizona, and she's winning states like Florida pretty handily.
Even Florida and Ohio and Pennsylvania that are states that should be toss-up states are leaning Democratic.
Mm-hmm. But if she wins the Electoral College, but the popular vote is very close, or even if he by some way happens to win the popular vote, it's not going to do much for the country's unity. I think it will fuel the dissension.
Kind of shot to hell anyway, isn't it?
Well, Bush versus Gore, and you would have thought people would be out there with their pots and pans, you know, yelling and screaming. They weren't.
Yeah.
They just took it.
Gore kind of went away, though. I wouldn't see Trump just walking away into the...
Nicholas wrote to us. I just want to clarify this. He said, "Why must Alan keep saying, 'Don't you see?' Less, please. 'Don't you see' came from Festus in Gunsmoke." He would say, "Don't you see? Don't you see? Don't you see?" I've adopted that as my credo. "Don't you see?" That's why I do it, and why I'm going to keep doing it. "Don't you see?"
I need a credo. I don't have a credo.
You can't have those. "Don't you see?" It's taken.
Oh, I could do it. I just won't do it here. I'll do it when I get out of here.
All right. Oh, you want more?
I thought you were going to read more letters.
Okay.
Well, let's take a break. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do some letters.
Support comes from NBT Bank, offering trust and fiduciary services, investment management, and retirement planning for individuals and businesses. NBTBank.com. Shakespeare & Company, Lenox, Massachusetts, presenting The Merchant of Venice, Shakespeare's drama exploring themes of prejudice, money, and revenge. Directed by Tina Packer. July 1st through August 21st, Shakespeare.org. Oblong Books, the Hudson Valley YA Society, presents authors Jennifer Castle, Tara Alta Brando, Laura Stampler, and Sarvenaj Tash for ages 12 to adult, Sunday, July 10th, 4 p.m. in Rhinebeck. Oblongbooks.com. And Hummingbird Jewelers, Rhinebeck, custom design specialist since 1978, featuring on-premises repair, restoration, and repurposing of family heirlooms. Hummingbirdjewelers.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We want to get to your letters. We're starting those just before we went to break, so we will get back to those now.
Okay. We heard from RCT. Chris, I like the expression, "Don't you see?" Keep using it, Alan. I think we're on to a theme. Trump supporters are like the Morlocks in H.G. Wells, the time machine emerging from the dark underground. Scary, says James. Let's see. Okay, we didn't get that one because it has nothing to do with what we're doing here. I think, hello, Roundtable. I think Trump is always taking the strategy to the truth. He says something outrageous, then backtrack just a little with a new position. The result is that he gains followers from both positions.
People and he keeps himself on the headlines, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People will hear what they want to hear, believe the position they want to believe, and tune out the rest. By the way, I think to some degree that was true of Obama, too. In other words, Obama was sort of a blank slate, unlike Trump. But a lot of people projected, mechanism of projection, go look it up, psychology majors, they projected into him what they believed he was for. Turned out he was for some of it, but not other parts of it. Yeah. But you that's one of the advantages you have when you don't have a record.
Mm-hmm.
So Hillary has that. Okay, let's see. Do we care? No, we don't care about what postings there are. You see, exclusive. No, that's wrong. That's, you know. Well, the problem is, Joe, as you know, we get 10,000 stuff from everybody who's sending us it. So, for example, the people who sell underwriting, because I'm the head of the station, they proudly say they sold underwriting. So I come down and say, no, we don't.
Okay.
We don't have to read that particular one.
No.
No, we don't. Or James Brown. No, we did that. See?
He feels good also.
Okay. Kenny says, Trump, he's not evolving and he's not changing positions. He doesn't think about any of these things. He has no opinion, doesn't care. Just so he says what's on the top of his head, I disagree with that entirely. I think this guy has a real intuition about what will work. And that he's crazy like a fox. I think he knows what he's doing, and anybody who assumes he doesn't know what he's doing is just wrong. So, for example, if he says, let's not let any Muslims in the country, disgraceful, awful, terrible. Nevertheless, he knows what he's doing, and he basically is looking at whatever data he has and says people are scared about this kind of thing, and he's playing to that kind of xenophobia.
And yet, when these positions are polled, it's often the case that the public dislikes them, right? I mean, people, 60-65% oppose that Muslim ban.
Well, yes, and that's...
Is he playing to a small group within the general electorate, or is he playing to the broader middle? That's the question. I mean, he won the primary doing that, no doubt, but this is a different situation.
Maybe not. So, as you know, there's some things I say you don't tell your mother and you don't tell your pollster. And one of those things is, I don't like Muslims. If somebody is, because he is going for that xenophobic group. And this is not something you tell a pollster.
But it's also, doesn't it explain why he is, I mean, we just read the thing of the change in positions. Of say, oh, well, it's all Muslims. Oh, it's only Muslims from these terrorist countries that are linked to terrorism. Oh, no, it's not this, it's that. And doesn't that show?
He's reading the polls.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, wouldn't you hope that, Corey Lewandowski, the new CNN commentator. He's been fired by the Trump campaign.
Fired by CNN.
Maybe we could get some insight into what the Trump strategy is from him. But according to what we're reading, he's signed a non-disparagement agreement. So anything he says on CNN will not say anything bad about Trump. So we're not really going to get any insight from him.
Well, in the campaign, the internal motto of the campaign supposedly is "Let Trump be Trump," right?
Which was Lewandowski's. That
let
was
him,
his.
Let him go.
And the day he isn't is when everybody says, he's a phony. He's like everybody
Well,
else.
And I would argue, don't you think the last two, three speeches that have been prepared remarks where he's reading from the teleprompter, that you are seeing that less and less? He's still, when he gets in trouble and the moments where people pounce is when he's on Twitter, as opposed to the speeches that he's now giving, which seem to be much more focused.
But see, that's a big problem for him, though, because his big advantage was free media. Yes. All throughout the primary is free media. And he can't, I don't think he can help himself but say these things when he's in an interview. He doesn't have the money for advertising, so he's got to rely on free media. So he's got to be like very disciplined during these interviews, and that may not be a skill that he has.
I think he's between a rock and a hard place. I think he's damned if he does, damned if he doesn't. If he, in fact, changes from the non-Donald Trump to the safe Donald Trump, he's done. Because all of those people who thought he was great because he, quote, said what he thought, you know, whatever that meant. He said what he thinks.
He's boring.
And that is boring. And also, he's just like the other guys. He's like all these other guys. Yeah. And that makes him a politician. So I think there's a certain amount, you're right, Chris, a certain amount of balancing that has to go on. There doesn't seem to be anything that's stopping him from being the old Trump.
And the question, you know, when I hear, like, let Trump be Trump, the question is, who is he?
Right. What is that?
What does that mean? And I'm not and when he changes positions, that makes me wonder what he actually is.
Well, I mean, does Hillary put this all in an ad where you see him changing positions?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
So what? I mean, you know, that's always been done. You get the puppet on, and the puppet looks one way and says one thing.
Yeah,
puppet looks the other way. He says another thing. You know, it's sort of old hat by now. And Kenny reminds us, the other thing you don't tell your pollsters is that you're voting for Trump. That's scary. Well, that may be. And we saw it happen in Great Britain. They got it wrong. People didn't, for one reason or another, say enough that the pollsters could accurately predict it. Talk about selective perception, says Steve. The Clinton supporters always ignore the truth about their candidates when demands she gets elected because, quote, we owe her. LOL at her. I don't know that we owe her anything, and I don't know that anybody says we owe her anything. Do you guys? Am I perception wrong that anybody ever campaigns for her and say we owe her?
I don't think so.
Why would we owe her? Or why would anyone owe her?
Because she's service.
Paid her dues?
Paid her service. Done a service, don't you know?
You know, she certainly isn't getting as much free media as Donald Trump is.
Yeah, we're talking about Trump, but she's a flawed candidate, too. I mean, if she wasn't a flawed candidate, this election would really be a runaway.
Yeah. Ray says, the Donald, you, the media, spent half the morning talking about Trump, nothing more. Okay. Right. I'm interested in another phenomenon. I don't know if this happens with you guys, but I get a lot of letters from politicians asking me for money. You see that? I hear from Hillary. I hear from Obama. I hear from Mitch McConnell. I hear from all these people saying, can you send us some money? Now there's a new thing in which we're getting guilt trips put on us. We keep writing you, and you haven't sent us any money. Right. Well, don't hold your breath.
No, I never get asked for money.
I don't either. But I've never given any, so that's probably why.
You're not on the list for some reason.
Yeah. If you give, you end up on the list.
Yeah, the one thing you never want to do is give. Because the moment you give, you're on the list. And Roselle, my wife
says the man who runs a $3 million fund drive.
No. It's true. You have to value what you... Let's take that one back.
Yeah, take that one back.
You have to value it. Now, my wife believes that everybody gets $25.
And so you're on a lot of lists.
God, are we on lists, as a result of that. But more than lists, they've now found my cell phone. I don't know how they get my cell phone. Hmm. But they're on the cell phone. They want to tell me about, you know, deals, things like that. And don't you love the one, you probably don't get this one. Don't you love the one in which they tell you, this is about your bank account. Now, your bank account is okay, but you should call us immediately.
Hey, do any of the politicians offer you premiums, like Mitch McConnell, Hillary Clinton?
No, I haven't seen any.
I have seen the one with Hillary offering to go. I can go to see Hamilton with her if I give money. I have gotten that one.
I actually have gotten that one, too, but I don't know where it came from.
And that's because you went to see Hamilton. That's why, Joe.
Yeah, but why then? Why
you're on the list because you're on the list.
For $25,000.
Yeah, right.
You're on the list.
Would you enjoy it anymore if Hillary was sitting
next
to you? Or would
it be good either way.
Be the same show.
We're out of time.
What's going on?
Little arm candy.
Yeah.
We're out of time. Thanks to Alan and Judy Patrick and Chris Churchill. We will be back with more show after this.